We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Only 5 weekends left in the college baseball season. There's no better way to bring in the newest week of college baseball than with a big old chest bump, because that's exactly what Tony Vitello did on Saturday for Tennessee, as they were able to come back and take 2 out of 3 from Alabama. The skipper for the Volunteers has been hit with a 4-game suspension. He's begun serving that already. Second game of that suspension will come in the midweek on Tuesday. And then he will miss the first 2 games of the upcoming weekend series for the Volunteers. We'll spend plenty of time on that as Michael Serber joins me. I am Kyle Schassberger. I'm on Twitter at Kyle Schass, at @L_Serberino. You can follow us on Twitter at CSNowTweets. Go ahead and slide into those DMs. No David Kahn today, Michael. And Serbs, you really weren't with us. You were with us in spirit a week ago when we recorded Sunday during the Masters. You were busy doing much more important things, making dinner for the wife, you know, being the great man that you are. But you're here now, and I know you made it the point to follow college baseball a little bit more. So you can thank David Kahn for that. He's somewhere patrolling the Eastern Hemisphere. It made me think of the Bobby Fischer line in the SNL skit with the two cheerleaders. Who was it? Will Ferrell and what's her face? The one who who smells her armpits?
Yeah, yeah, Sherry O'Terry.
Yeah, yeah. Where is Bobby Fischer? So where is David Kahn?
He's David giving Kahn. Us. Where is he? I don't know. I don't know. David Kahn. Where is he? I don't know. I don't know. That's the thing, right?
That is the thing. He's sending us pictures of a bidet in his hotel room. That was the last update I got from him.
Yeah, not surprised. We've learned his fascination and support of that device on previous episodes of this show. We don't need to rehash all of that, but let's just say he's more experienced than you or I.
Well, what was your? he certainly is. I'll leave the bidet to David Kahn. That's for sure. So, did you get like wet, wild, and weird in college baseball this weekend? I mean, what was the takeaway from the weekend for you?
Well, it wasn't the weekend to really like hammer in and watch a lot of games because it was a holiday weekend, Passover and Easter going on this weekend. So, you know, there's some family obligations, but I'm going to take responsibility and I'll go ahead and I'm going to delete this from something that we have later on in the show. I'm just going to say right now, little old Clemson took 2 out of 3 against Wake Forest. And that was the first time they'd won. I don't have their schedule in front of me, but the first time they won the series in what, about a month, month and a half? So hit close to home there. Beyond that, absolute chaos. One, Tennessee's coach, that was an aggressive chest bump. Like that was not what I'm used to seeing in a baseball game from a coach. It's more like what you're used to seeing from a dude who is at a bar, who's like maybe some other guy was hitting on his girlfriend and that's his reaction. It was super aggressive. And the look on the umpire's face, do you know who the ump was? Do you know? Is he one that makes it on television often?
Jeffrey Macias, who apparently has some sort of a history, too, with Tennessee, dating back to last year's College World Series. We'll ask Aaron Fitt about that. He's going to join us, give us a little bit of help with David Kahn out. There's no better time to bring in somebody like Aaron Fitt, the co-editor of D1Baseball.com. So we'll ask him about that. But and, of course, yeah, the chaotic weekend that was with three top 10 teams getting swept, Texas Tech, Louisville, and Notre Dame. On Friday alone, seven of the top 10 teams had lost, but and we've got a new set of rankings, of course, to unpack as we look ahead to this coming weekend in college baseball, and we'll do that with Aaron Fitt. But Serbs, you're right. The story is Tennessee. The story is Tony Vitello. So not only do the Volunteers have their 23-game win streak come to a close on Tuesday against Tennessee Tech, which flew well under the radar because it's a midweek college baseball game, and again, we're in the middle of April. It's Easter week. So that flew under the radar for most. But then you get to Friday, and Tennessee brings her 12-game SEC win streak, starting a perfect 12-0 in the league. First time a team in the SEC has ever done that, and they lose to Alabama. So a team that had won 23 in a row all of a sudden has lost two straight. You lose Tuesday, you lose Friday. And then on Saturday, you lose your pitching coach in Frank Anderson, who comes out after Chase Dolander gets drilled with a line drive on Saturday. This is game two of the series. And apparently there was some sort of a reaction from the Alabama dugout that caused the pitching coach for the Volunteers, Frank Anderson, to come bolting out of the Vols dugout in defense of his guy on the hill in Dolander. And this will tell you some too. Anderson was less concerned with the status of Dolander, who exited the game in that first inning after taking the line drive. He was less concerned with the health of his pitcher and more preoccupied with going at the Alabama dugout. So the reaction immediately was, all right, Anderson, you're gone. So the umpiring crew tosses out Frank Anderson. Tony Vitello is not far behind, comes out there. Him and Jeffrey Macias are the two that you see pictured in the video that has gone viral to this point. They're the two exchanging words. Something is said where Vitello, it just sets him off, right? It sends him over the edge, and he chest bumps Jeffrey Macias in front of the mound. Now, I thought it was an all-time chest bump, sir. You might think he was out of line, and sure,
we can
debate the merits of it, perhaps. I don't know. Maybe it was over the top.
No.
But I thought it was an epic chest bump.
No. Do not misread. I do not think it was over the top. But, you know, and it wasn't overly aggressive, like, maybe I described it wrong there. But, like, but it certainly was, it was noteworthy, right? It's like, it was much more than kicking dirt on the umpire's shoes, like, that's for sure. But the thing is, like, okay, yeah, they lose back-to-back games. They lose one to Bama. They take the series. They're still number one. And honestly, like, this is something you can get into with Aaron Fitt when he comes on, but, like, what would it take to knock Tennessee from the number? Like, it's going to take a massive drop-off in play over the next couple series for them to even sniff losing the number one spot in the country. They're just head and shoulders above everybody else because of that massive winning streak, heading into SEC play and then continuing through the Vandy boys, Missouri, so on and so forth. So, I'd be interested to see if, like, anybody can knock them from that spot. Beyond that, though, like, Vitello, like, they're going to be fine this weekend, right? Do we think his presence is, like, a game changer?
No, because
because of how well they've played so far this season, like, that's not all on his shoulders. Florida's a good squad, but like, they'll likely be fine. And even if they drop this series, does it hurt them in the long run? Maybe when it comes to world, I don't think so. I don't think it even hurts them. Like, this is a free weekend for the guys. Bosses away.
No, we've already learned how this team can perform without Vitello. I mean, he obviously lit a fire. Under the Volunteers, and they responded in the best way possible. They went out and beat Alabama 9-2 on Saturday. After both coaches get ejected, they put up 9 runs on Saturday. Then Sunday, they come back and win 15-4 without Vitello and without Frank Anderson, who was serving his one-game suspension, the pitching coach. This sparked the Volunteers team in a way that they needed. Only their coach could do. After they had won 23 games in a row, you then lose two straight, 3-2 to Tennessee Tech in the midweek, 6-3 to Alabama to open the series at home on Friday, and then your coaches get ejected and you win 9-2 and 15-4. So we know that they are more than capable now of being able to play for their coach, and Vitello is doing this. I think it was well orchestrated, well designed, in the moment. There was some intent there. I don't believe that he intended to chest bump Macias necessarily the way that he had, but in that moment, and it might have gotten the best of him, he did that. And I'm sure he may be, I don't know, 10%, 20% ashamed maybe of the chest bump itself, if you were to ask him, you know, to be real with you. But in terms of the result of what happened with his team's response, and we'll see how they play in Gainesville this weekend when they go to Florida for three, but I don't think there's any doubt that Tennessee is not going to be able to go out there and perform for their coach, who they're not going to have out there for the first two games. I think this lit a fire, as evident from this weekend, and it's going to continue to burn. And you're right. What is it going to take for Tennessee to spiral? You know, is that possible? Is that on the table? I don't think so. The negative here, they have Florida, they have Auburn, Kentucky, Georgia, and Mississippi State are the five remaining series to close out the regular season in the SEC. The downside here is I think it delegitimizes, or devalues might be the better word, the regular season in the SEC, right, Serbs? Because I think all we can do now is look ahead to Hoover, but then at the same time, like, it's Hoover. We know Hoover doesn't really have any sort of a final say on the postseason picture. Mississippi State went one and done last year and ended up winning the national championship. Like, you are who you are once you get to Hoover, and once you're a team out of the SEC, a league that's going to post, you know, 9-10 NCAA tournament bids, what you do in Hoover is rarely going to be factored in. Maybe a slight seed bump, but you know, the likelihood of that happening is not very strong. So I think Tennessee is going to be just fine.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to be in need of a seed bump when it comes to Hoover. So I think you're spot on there. Like, this, they're not going to collapse down the stretch. They've played perfectly well without their coach in over the weekend. They're going to probably play perfectly well this weekend in Gainesville, and you know, they'll move and they'll move on, and we will see, you know, when the rubber hits the road in regional, super regionals, that things will get very interesting. But I don't think that top spot's going to be an interesting argument unless we see something really, really monumental happen down the stretch.
So let's reset the top 25 here the week of April 18th. This podcast will drop on the 19th on Tuesday. Serbs and I got a Midwest road trip coming up. More on that before we get out of here. So we'll give you the pod on Tuesday morning. But you'll see Tennessee in that number one spot again. No reason for them to give them up. I mean, who else are you going to award the number one position too, right, Serb? So at 33-3, 2-2 last week, followed by Oregon State, who was perfect. They had a series against Long Beach State, stepping out of pack play behind OSU. The other OSU, Oklahoma State, who won a series, taking the rubber match against West Virginia on Eastern Sunday. They go 3-1 over the week, so the Pokes are there at third. Arkansas swept LSU for the first time since 2011, held the Tigers' high-powered offense to only 6 runs. The Hogs are at number 4, according to the D1Baseball.com poll. And then Miami, who dropped 2 out of 3, nearly got swept by Virginia Tech. The Hokies had won 13 of 15 after taking the series, winning Game 2 against the Hurricanes in Blacksburg. Miami salvages Game 3, goes 2-2 in the week. They're 28-8 overall. They were 2 last week. They check in at number 5. And how about the Southern Miss Golden Eagles, Serbs? All the way up to number 6 in the polls, 27-8, a perfect 4-0 week. They've got 5 games this week, including a series with Rice on the weekend, but they play at Tulane on Tuesday, which will be a really fun mid-major contest down in New Orleans. And then New Orleans will come to them on Wednesday. So Southern Miss, who won the first two games at FIU, tight games, too, on Thursday and Friday, they came back, come from behind. They were down 4-3 in both ball games Friday and Saturday, but Saturday they come back and win in the 12th inning. 27-8 are Scott Barry's bunch as they check in at number 6. A team that legitimately, and we'll ask Aaron Fitt about this when we hear from him shortly, is going to have a chance to host a regional again at the Pete this postseason.
Yeah, well, let's ask Fitt about it now. We've got the man, the myth, the legend, the star of today's episode on, so why don't you get started, man?
Oh, Aaron, are you on? I didn't realize you were on with us, buddy. What's up? How you been?
I've been great, fellas. How you guys doing?
Dude, it's awesome. Michael Serber producing, Kyle Schatzberger here with you. Follow Aaron Fitt on Twitter at Aaron Fitt, co-editor at D1Baseball.com. We'll circle back to Southern Miss, Aaron, because I know you saw them against Charlotte a couple of weeks ago. But we let off the podcast, of course, with Tony Vitello. There's no other way to do so, right? Rate the chest bump that Tony Vitello delivered to Jeffrey Macias over the weekend.
Well, it was probably about a six, maybe a seven, I'd say, on the chest bump scale. It was over the line, you know, and Tony has a history of some hot-headedness, and that's just part of who he is. But you gotta rein it in. You can't do, you just can't do that. He knows he can't do that. Now maybe he thinks it's worth it, you know, like all the antics to get his team fired up and all that stuff. That's just part of their program, but it's not for me. I'd rather not see that.
Interesting. Yeah, it's the optics of it are not good. I guess the only, you know, for me, I don't mind it because I know it lights a spark under his team. I guess there's better ways, and you saw that in the response over the weekend. We'll see how it plays out in Gainesville. I guess there's better ways certainly to handle it physically. You don't want to assault somebody. Like, that's never something anyone would recommend. But I think for the overall exposure of the game, it can do a lot maybe in drawing some interest. It's just, you know, it's a double-edged sword, I guess, if you will. If it's going to generate a little bit of exposure for the game over the weekend, it comes at a cost. Macias has some history, though, with Tennessee, right? Didn't he run – he ran a former assistant out of the College World Series last year. I mean, there isn't – this isn't some extended beef, though. Like, this is just coincidental over the weekend, right?
Well, yeah, I wasn't part of the conversation this weekend, but you're right. There is history. It was Ross Kivett that he ejected last year in Omaha, and I thought that was a crap ejection. You know, I just, you know, I thought that was totally on the umpire. It didn't look like Kivett deserved that one. And so maybe there is still some residual bad blood there, and that's fine. Get yourself tossed, you know, argue, get your money's worth, but don't touch the guy. You can't do it. You just, you know, he charged at him and, you know, and fist bump. I mean, chest bumped him. You just can't act like that. Be a grown up, you know, come on, man.
How about the idea of banning a home run pop, like the fur coat? Is there precedent for that in college baseball? Tennessee made a name for themselves a year ago with the pink daddy hat. Now they've been donning the pink daddy hat and a fur coat for much of the season after home runs. And going into this weekend, Macias and this crew had made it a point to ban that home run prop. Have we seen something like that before?
Now that I think is unprecedented as far as I know. I mean, everybody does this stuff. You got your cowboy hat down there at Oklahoma State. You got your, you know, your hammer at Virginia Tech. I mean, everybody has their goofy stuff. It's college baseball. Like, on what grounds could they possibly ban it? That one I'll have to do some more digging into because I don't understand how they have the authority to ban props in the dugout. That seems ridiculous.
So handicap the SEC race for us moving forward, and we'll bounce around a little bit again. Grateful for your time here, giving us 10, 15 minutes or so on College Sports Now. It's Aaron Fitt. But is the SEC regular season pretty much locked up? I mean, we got 5 weeks to go. There's still a lot of baseball, and that's always kind of something that's in the back of my mind, Aaron, as we project and look and break down. So many different things can happen. The season will play itself out, but it would take a lot here for Tennessee to have to give up that number one position and that number one ranking in the SEC. I mean, you look forward to Hoover, but, you know, again, how much bearing is that even going to have on the postseason?
Right. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, Tennessee clearly is in the catbird seat. They're 14-1 in the league. I think they're three games better than Arkansas, who's leading the West at 11-4. So, you know, that's not insurmountable. I mean, theoretically, Tennessee could stumble. The only thing that I always would caution people is when you've got freshmen that you're counting on heavily in your rotation, there's a long history of those guys wearing down late, especially once you get into Omaha, because they're not used to pitching, you know, that kind of a workload over a long college season. It's a big jump up in the amount of innings on their arms, you know, from high school senior year to new college freshman year. And so, I mean, even the elite freshmen over the years, the guys that have won National Freshman of the Year, they get to Omaha and you just see them hit a wall. And sometimes it happens before that. And one thing to watch with Tennessee is, you know, is Chase Burns starting to maybe hit some kind of a wall, because he's, I think, had two straight outings that were not great. So Burns and Beam are such a huge key for Tennessee. And I know they've got Tidwell back, and maybe, you know, as you build him up, maybe he could slide into the rotation should one of those guys stumble. But that's, you know, that's something to keep an eye on with Tennessee. Now they're at Florida this week. I still think Florida's dangerous. They've been an up and down team. They're another team that's very young on the mound, but at least you've got a true number one guy, a horse in Hunter Barco, who I still think is probably the best ace in college baseball. So, I mean, if, you know, if he can win that first game, then all of a sudden, you know, you could see Florida finding a pathway to taking that series at home. And, you know, who knows? I mean, it could happen. Somebody could catch the Vols, but yeah, right now I don't think it would be wise to bet on anybody catching them. I mean, they're 33-3. They've had an absurd season to this point.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Aaron Fitz on with us here on College Sports Now. Aaron, I wanted to ask you, we've kind of talked about on this show before, it's difficult to kind of get a bearing sometimes at the beginning of the season on rankings and looking around. College baseball is different than other college sports as far as like how we rank them. How difficult is it for you guys each week, you know, exercise of ranking these teams with so many schools across the country playing? How difficult is it week to week?
Well, some weeks it's more difficult than others, and this was one of those weeks where we just had carnage in the top 25. You know, you had 15 teams that were ranked last week had losing weekends. And so, you know, usually if a team gets swept, for instance, like Texas Tech did at number 4, you want to hit them pretty hard in the rankings. But everybody seemed like in the teens lost their weekends. And so, like, it kind of cushions the fall. And then people start saying, oh, well, how come you didn't hit these guys harder? Look how hard you hit this other team when they got swept last week. But the circumstances are different from week to week. And, you know, the context matters. And it changes constantly. And so, yeah, I get that it can be unsatisfying for people. But it's just this week was a jumbled mess. And some weeks it's easy. And you just line them all up and everything falls into place. Now, we're always trying to balance, you know, a team's resume, what they've accomplished to this point in the season, with kind of strength of schedule and what's, you know, our overall evaluation of the team, because that's our starting point heading into the season. I mean, it's not like we're just throwing darts against the wall. Like, right. We go out there all fall and we watch these teams in the fall. And I went to Arkansas and I went to Stillwater and I walked away and said, these are the two best teams I saw this fall. Mm-hmm. And we ranked them, you know, in the top 5 or 10 in the preseason. And you look up now and they're in the top 3, top 4. So there's a reason for that. These teams are good, and sometimes we're wrong. You know, sometimes we miss on our preseason evaluations, or a team just doesn't achieve up to its potential. And then the rankings reflect that as the season goes along. I mean, eventually the results are what matters. But early in the season, you have to start somewhere. You're right. And so I feel pretty good about our starting point. And then we have the ability to make adjustments as we go. So it certainly is more of an art than a science. But I like our process fine. I think our rankings are pretty well generally received by people, and even people who don't like them, it gives them something to complain about, right? It keeps yeah. keeps them engaged.
And it is important to note, Cerber, those D1 baseball rankings are adopted by the NCAA. It's what they use on their yeah. official website. So we've got the Don of rankings on with us. His crew is, you know, the most accepted rankings out there of D1baseball.com, Aaron Fitt. Aaron, ACC, Pac-12, Big 12, legitimate intrigue at the top of each of those leagues with Texas Tech, 2 back of Big 12 leading Oklahoma State, UT, Texas is 3 back now. You got West Virginia and TCU right near the top. In the Pac-12, you've got the top eight all within three games. In the ACC, the Atlantic Division specifically, top five are separated by only one game. Which of those three leagues fascinates you most and why?
Oh my God, that's a tough one because they're all very intriguing right now. You know, the Pac, I think you hit on, there's five teams that all feel like legitimate, you know, contenders, Omaha contenders potentially, you know, all teams that have realistic shots to host regionals and to win the conference tournament. And they're separated by, what, like a game, you know? So that one is certainly intriguing. The Big 12, you've got that little separation at the top all of a sudden with Oklahoma State, but TCU is surging after it looked like they were fading just a week ago. They go and they sweep Texas Tech. And you've got West Virginia, who's been one of the more, I guess you'd say, a surprise team. You know, they've had a pretty good year to this point. And, you know, is Texas going to make a run? Like, they're 6-6 in the league. And you keep waiting for them to just become that buzzsaw that we thought they would be. And it just hasn't really happened. They've just kind of slogged through it. So, again, you've got four or five teams there in the Big 12 that all feel like factors. And the ACC is just a wild ride. It's just a jumbled mess. Just a week ago, you think Miami is the team that's really separating itself. And they lose a series to Virginia Tech. Now, they didn't get swept, and they're still in great position at 14-4. But after them, it just feels like a melee, you know, and every week you got a team beating up on another team, and it's just impossible for any of these teams to sustain a lot of momentum. And so, it feels like it's 12 teams deep right now, maybe a little less than that with Clemson kind of fading after their early start. But I mean, it feels like you could easily see a path for 10 teams to make regionals in the ACC this year. And we'll just see how those teams sort each other out as it goes.
So I think there would be maybe even more bids than the SEC at this point. I mean, the ACC could get more teams hosting than the SEC, which is certainly a wild thought, something we're not as accustomed to. You bring up Texas. Is there time for them to figure it out? And has it simply just been injuries? I know they've been killed in pitching this year, but I mean, so much expectation to begin the year, preseason number one, and I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, they still had a good year. I mean, part of it is, you know, expectations were so high. They were, I think, the consensus preseason number one, coming off an Omaha team with a lot back. But they're sitting here at 26-12 with a number 10 RPI, and they've still had a good year. They've played a good schedule. They have that sweep against Alabama early that looks a lot better since Alabama has kind of gotten hot. That said, yeah, I mean, you lose Tanner Witt, who's a first-round talent from your rotation. That was a big blow. And it just, the bullpen has been kind of shaky. You know, Aaron Nixon was a preseason All-American, a first-teamer for us. And it seemed like he's kind of had some confidence struggles and just hasn't been able to get it going. And, yeah, we kind of thought, all right, Texas, they've been grinding it out. They win a series at Oklahoma or at Globe Life against Oklahoma. They take 2 out of 3 from TCU, and then they go and they lose 2 out of 3 at Kansas State, who's this one of the worst teams in the league, and it's just like a head-scratcher, you know? So yeah, I still think there's time. I still think Texas is going to be there at the end, but, boy, it hasn't been smooth sailing like we thought it would be.
Aaron, I want to call kind of an audible here and ask you a question that's kind of not related to what we've been seeing going on this season. You go to a lot of ballparks, you watch a lot of baseball throughout the season, and therefore I assume you visit the concession stand often throughout the season. We did a tournament during March Madness of the best Mark Light shakes, based on our co-host David Kahn's trip down to Miami to call a couple games. Have you had a Mark Light shake? If you have you had multiple, and do you have a favorite?
Yeah, boy, you know, I have had Mark Light shakes. I make it a point.
He's pulling up the menu right now. I could hear the
keyboard.
That,
huh?
Yeah.
It's been a few years since I've been down there. We have a guy who lives right there in Miami who tends
here's the thing. Here's the thing for the Hurricanes, Aaron. You know, they had won 14 in a row, right? They dropped 2 out of 3 on the road at Virginia Tech. They're returning home this week. So it's not necessarily home cooking, but it's, you know, home shake time. So the Mark Light shake can help provide them the pick-me-up that they need against Pitt this weekend. So, like, what would help them get off the mat? The artist formerly known as the second-best team in the country, and Aaron Fitt, you can help them out. Because I know Miami was very complimentary of you a couple of weeks ago. Who was it that went down there? Virginia? Like, your picks, the teams around the country love to retweet those D1 baseball graphics when you're like the only guy picking a team amongst the rest of the crew, whether it's, you know, Kendall Rogers or Mike Rooney or whomever that you have on staff. So this is another opportunity here for one of these programs to give you a hat tip, and it could be Miami with the Mark Light chick.
I'll tell you, they loved me a few weeks ago because I was the only one, I think, that picked them to win a series at Clemson. It was kind of before they went on this run. And then they turned against me because I picked against them a couple weeks in a row. But this week I was the only guy who picked Virginia Tech. So I'm embracing the heel turn now. Let's go.
That's great. Well, while you peruse the menu, is there anybody out west other than the usual contenders, just as we kind of hit each corner here in the country with 5 weekends to go in the regular season, you know, beyond an Oregon State, beyond UCLA and Stanford in the Pac-12? I know Gonzaga is a team now that's inside the top 10. Who are some teams on your radar out west that maybe not enough people are talking about?
I think the Big West is interesting. Cal Poly, you've got maybe the best player in the country in Brooks Lee, the shortstop, and a real bona fide ace in Drew Thorpe, a Team USA guy. I mean, that's a great core. It's a team that started very poorly this year, but they've found themselves. They just won a big series at UC Irvine, which was our preseason pick to win that league. So they're sitting there at 9-3. But they're still looking up at UC Santa Barbara. You know, the Gauchos have been a familiar face in the postseason now under Andrew Checkitz for the last decade. And they're 13-2 quietly. You know, they're just taking care of business. They haven't had a chance to make a lot of noise. They're not in the rankings because they just haven't really played any great teams. I mean, they played a 4-game series at Oregon early and they split it. And that's really the only regional caliber team they've played. But they've taken care of business against everyone they've played. And it's a good roster that has experience. So I definitely think that they're a team that could be dangerous, you know, as we head down the stretch into the postseason. So those two teams, I know UNLV has been kind of the class of the Mountain West this year, a team that can really swing the bats. And then you mentioned Gonzaga, you know, a team that has a chance to host a regional. I mean, they're really having a great year. They swept Oklahoma State on the road early, which was really the tent pole weekend for their whole resume. It gives them a chance to host. I mean, they're 14 in the RPI right now. They've got two games coming up this week at Oregon State. I think if they win both of those, boy, they could really make a run here in the pecking order for being one of those national seeds. But right now they played Oregon State twice early and they lost those games. So I think these two are big ones. It's almost make or break for them to solidify themselves as a potential host. But they're a team that has real starting pitching. That's what stands out about Gonzaga, big time arms. And so that's a team you would not want to face in a regional because they can shut you down.
Yeah, actually checking in at number 12 this week in the D1Baseball.com top 25 rankings. How about the Big Ten? Maryland, lone Big Ten team that's ranked yet. Rutgers, 30-6, 11-1. They've won a nation-leading 15 in a row. What are they putting in the water in Piscataway?
Yeah, they've done a great job. I mean, a program that has been irrelevant for a long time. And, you know, Steve Owens comes in after a great run as the head coach at Bryant. And before that, he had turned LeMoyne into a winner, you know, and then LeMoyne dropped down out of D1. But this guy's got a long track record. He's a great coach, just a blue collar guy. He can really coach offense, and this team can really hit. You know, it's again a veteran team, but also some exciting younger bats. And the only reason they're not in the top 25 right now is, again, strength of schedule. They've only played 2 games against teams with top 100 RPIs. And so you give them credit. They're in first place. They're 11-1. They're 30-6. They're having a great year, but maybe another week away from breaking into the top 25. But I love what they've been doing. You know, I mean, it's a place that, again, hasn't been a factor in baseball in a long time. And, you know, they look dangerous right now. Certainly on paper, we like the talent there.
I was talking about Southern Miss right when you hopped on with us. So I'll ask the question. You believe this team is hosting a regional come the committee selection on Memorial Day? They've won, I think, 9 in a row, 6th-ranked team according to your rankings, 9 straight for the Golden Eagles. And they're in total control in Conference USA.
Yeah, they sure are. And I'll tell you what, they're a real team. I mean, I think they're an Omaha-caliber club. They think it's the best pitching staff they've ever had there. You know, and they had two really good dudes in their rotation last year with Walker Powell and Hunter Stanley, and they lost them both. And there was some question about how their pitching was going to be this year. But, you know, it's deeper. That's the big thing. They've gotten some guys to emerge. You've got some real, you know, kind of elite pitchability guys there with Hunter Riggins. And then you've got a a first round talent as your Sunday starter in Hurst and Waldrop. You know, this guy's up to 97 with four pitches. It's legit, and he's figured out the pitchability piece. So I just think their pitching is outstanding. They also have a veteran lineup, you know, Gabe Montenegro and Will McGillis and all these guys. Danny Lynch, he's got the fifth, 6 year seniors in some cases. They played a lot of college games, and you like to go to war with those kind of guys. So, you know, I think they're a balanced club that does everything pretty well. And I do think they're going to host a regional if they can keep this up, which there's no reason to believe they'll fade. I mean, they're 13-2 in Conference USA. I think they're the best team in the league. And most of the challenging parts of their conference schedule are behind them. So I think they host, and I think they could break through to Omaha this year.
Would be quite the story for those in Hattiesburg. Tulane, New Orleans, and Rice this weekend. Aaron, 2 minutes. Let's go through some rapid fire so people can learn more about you, the person. Not necessarily the baseball writer, but let's have a little bit of fun. Learn a little bit more about Aaron Fitt. We've got a series of questions I just want to roll through. You don't need to be long-winded or anything. I know your time is precious. Thank you for coming on with us. But, Serbs, go ahead and lead us off here with a series of questions. Let's learn more about Aaron Fitt before we get him out of here.
All right, if Disney wasn't going to sue us, this is where we do the getting to know you music in the background. So, favorite ballpark, Aaron?
I would say Duty Noble Field is just the best combination of atmosphere and amenities, and that place is amazing. It's the gold standard right now.
How about a park that you have not yet visited but most want to?
I assume we're talking college baseball here.
You give me both.
I've been to most of them. You know, the ones that I really want to go to in college baseball.
How about major leagues then?
I've never been to Wrigley, which is a disgrace. Oh. It's an utter disgrace. It's been on my bucket list forever. And one of these days we'll get there.
Shoss. Chicagoan. My man.
Dude, I am offended.
Get him there.
I am offended. Here,
get
you can there. Redeem yourself. Favorite food.
Favorite food, barbecue. I mean, Eastern North Carolina pulled pork. I've been a North Carolinian for two decades now, so that's where I go.
My man, favorite drink, is it Cheerwine to go with it?
You know, I'm gonna go with the nice craft IPA on that one. I'm a beer guy.
Yes, love it.
Pre-game superstition as a reporter.
I got nothing on that one. You know, just make sure you get to the ballpark before first pitch. That's about as superstitious as I got.
You're not putting your left shoe on before you ride or anything, or pulling, you know, the high socks underneath. You're not wearing a jock strap or anything like that either. So,
as Pedro Martinez once said, I don't believe in curses. You know, wake up the damn bambino. I don't believe in curses.
Netflix, Prime, or HBO Max?
I use all three, like all three. I guess if I had to pick one, I would say Netflix.
Netflix. Good, good. Have you ever dressed up as the Easter Bunny?
I've worn Easter Bunny ears. Okay. That's as far as I've gone.
My early days in radio, I did dress up as the Easter Bunny, so count yourself as lucky.
See, that's not an off the wall. I know Easter was yesterday, but even if it wasn't, like, that makes sense for radio.
By the way, the Easter Bunny outfit is the most terrifying to children. It is a scarring experience to be the Easter Bunny, because it's just children screaming in your face. Favorite Halloween costume?
I dressed up as Marty McFly one year. My wife was Jennifer. That was a big hit. I'm a big Back to the Future guy.
Yeah.
So can we get you to wear that? Like, is there a scenario where you would wear that into the press box to cover a game? What would it take?
I think we could make that happen. Yeah. I mean, maybe if it's like a Cubs Marlins World Series game, which I know is impossible, but if that were to happen, you know, to fulfill the prophecy, then I think I would have to do that.
We could do that, and we can even get you in Charlotte for the ACC tournament or Hoover. And maybe if it meant an increase in D1Baseball.com subscriptions, like, I don't know how many hundreds of subscriptions we need, but we need you to dress up as Marty McFly. That would be great.
We'll work on that.
Come on, Marty!
All right, Aaron, I appreciate you stopping by, having some fun with us, man, helping to break down the world of college baseball. It's been a joy. Follow him on Twitter at Aaron Fitt. D1Baseball.com is where you can find it. There's promo codes galore out there. Look at Aaron Fitt. Look at Kendall Rogers. You got anything for the guys, for the listeners? What are you guys running right now? What can fans do, baseball fans who aren't familiar about D1Baseball.com? How can they subscribe?
We've got everything you need to follow college baseball. You know, chats, podcasts, analysis. It's all there. Scoreboard, best scoreboard out there. D1Baseball.com. Give us a look. Give us a follow at D1Baseball on Twitter.
You the man. I appreciate you, Aaron. Take care, okay?
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. That's Aaron Fitz. Serber, Marty McFly, do you accept his answer for favorite Halloween costume?
As someone who performs music under the stage name Crispin Lover, I give it my wholehearted approval. Yes, absolutely. Phenomenal. Absolutely.
That's
phenomenal.
Awesome. Good stuff.
Hey, that was a great interview. And D1 Baseball is D1 Baseball is like the mecca for any college baseball fan. Can't recommend it enough. If you've been looking for a way to find an easier way to keep up with the game, that is the way to do it, because they are all extremely talented and they do an awesome job. Really glad we were able to get Aaron on with us today.
If you're not on D1Baseball.com and you're not a subscriber, you're just doing it wrong.
You're doing it
if
wrong.
You're a college baseball nut. So should be a part of your everyday routine. I know for me, I'm in my phone, you know, scrolling, looking at stories, catching up on the scores several times throughout the day. So certainly once college basketball concludes, it's really the only, you know, source of sports notes that I'm constantly, you know, trying to entrench myself into. So D1Baseball.com is the place to be. Serbs, let's move along. We got three up and three down. Dudes of the week, hat tip, lineup card. Before we get out of here, we'll cruise through this over the next 20 minutes or so. So I want to give some joy to the little guys in our three up segment. Central Michigan, Mercer, and Campbell. Chippewas 23-10, 17-1 in the MAC, 13 straight wins. They play Madonna on Tuesday. Serbs, while I continue to talk, can you please Google Madonna and find out more about this small Division II, III? I have no idea what kind of school this is. Central Michigan is at Ball State in a couple of weeks, 15-3.
The school is a blonde. I can see here.
Is it really?
Oh, wait. No. That's Madonna. Okay. Got it. My bad.
Yeah, I have no I saw they're playing Madonna. I'm like, wait, she has her own institution.
This has got to be some sort of Jesuit university.
It's gotta. Mercer, 31-5, 6-0, 12 straight wins. Mercer, 6-0 in the Southern Conference. They're at Georgia Tech on Tuesday. And then Campbell, out of the Big South, 22-12, 12-1 in conference play. 12 straight wins for the Fighting Camels. They haven't lost since that 36-4 shellacking of Presbyterian. And Serbs, I know you remember that one. At UNC on Tuesday, Campbell and North Carolina. Certainly be an entertaining Tuesday night midweek matchup, at least on paper. Honorable mention, Davidson 28-6, 8-1 in the A-10. They've won 9 of their last 10 and 6 straight. UC Santa Barbara out of the Big West, 13-2 start in league play, 24-8 overall. They've won 6 straight and 8 of their last 10. Got a 2.5 game lead on Cal Poly. You heard Aaron Fitt plug Cal Poly and some of the Big West teams out there to pay attention to, in addition to the big boys and, of course, even Gonzaga. Grand Canyon's another one. 25-12, 15-3 start in Western Athletic Conference play. They had won 8 in a row before California Baptist spoiled their attempt at a sweep over the weekend. So a lot of love for the little guys in the three-up segment and more, including the honorable mention. Serbs, any update on Madonna?
Madonna University is a private Catholic university in Livonia, Michigan. Seems like it was established in 1937. This is a very small school of 3,500 students. I mean, people would think that you like went into this with a theme of pick the little guys. Let's shed some light on the little guys. Well, it was actually impossible to pick three up unless you went with like the really good mid-major programs across the country, because of how terrible everyone was last week. So, we're going to get to hat tips later, but an early hat tip to you for seeking out the information on these mid-major programs, because there really wasn't anything to reward when it comes to the power conferences.
No, not at all. And Tennessee hanging on to that number one spot, there's no necessary reason, no conclusion. There'd be no reason out there to ever think of bumping them out of that number one spot. And with 7 of the 10 losing on Friday inside the top 10 and 3 top 10 teams getting swept, yeah, you got to dig a little bit deeper. Mm-hmm. Serbs got to work a little bit harder. And our man Khan is off, you know, frolicking on a pilgrimage east of the pond. And you and I are here to hold the fort down. And, you know, we got to do the best we can. Madonna, by the way, they're their nickname, the Crusaders.
Crusaders, yeah. The Cruiser, the Crusader. He looks like just about the most generic Spartan mascot you've ever seen in your entire life. Something tells me we gonna fire up chips on Tuesday. But that's just a thought.
Fire up chips. Central Michigan and Madonna. Set your calendar, set your timer, your watch to that, wherever you can find it. I'd be surprised if it existed, but, you know, in the ESPN Plus area.
It's got to be a regional something another going on up there. I mean, like, Central Michigan and Western Michigan, like, those schools, Eastern Michigan as well, like, those schools are kind of, they're equivalent to what we have here in North Carolina with, like, ECU and Appalachian State. You know, there's a ton of people who are all, like, grew up Michigan fans or Michigan State fans and then went to those schools because they had a better major or something like that. But, like, and they're into it. I guarantee you there's, like, a regional, like, Fox station or like a stadium style affiliate that's going to have that game. I don't know how you're going to find it. We're not going to watch it, but it's there. Maybe tell us.
As a Midwest man myself, from Chicago, I've never heard of Livonia, so it is just west of Detroit, very tiny, between Ann Arbor and Detroit, so not bad. And I know Mount Pleasant is in the northern part of the state. So, yeah, there's probably some bad blood between those guys. You know, maybe guys at Madonna wanted to be recruited by Central Michigan, or, you know, the players are dating girls from the other university. There could be some legit drama brewing between those two. So, I mean, get your popcorn ready for Central Michigan and Madonna on Tuesday night. How about three down? Dallas Baptist. Serbs, DBU had the number two RPI in all of the country entering the weekend. They lost two of three, the first two, the Bradley Braves on the road, who has an RPI of 156. Can't have it. So 23-12, 4-2 now in the league. Through two weekends in the Missouri Valley, Dallas Baptist has split each of their first two series. Not a good look for the Patriots. Ole Miss, they win their opener 9-1 at South Carolina, lose the next two against the Gamecocks in Columbia. That's 10 of their last 15 that the Rebels have lost. And then LSU mound visits. So I took in Thursday night's opener against Arkansas at Balm Walker. Mm-hmm. And Jay Johnson's walked to the mound. I think I can drive to the office in a faster amount of time than it takes Jay Johnson to go from the dugout to the mound.
What are we
and
doing
I live
here?
15 minutes away.
What are we doing here?
The amount of mound visits in general that LSU was doing to try and slow the pace down. This is what Jay Johnson does. This is what he brought from Arizona. Like, the game is going to be played at his pace, and he's going to look to muck it up in a way where he's going to irritate the other fan base and viewers specifically, especially, but he doesn't give a damn. And LSU, I think, at one point sent five pitchers to the mound in one of the later innings. It was a terrific game, game one, too, by the way. All these games were really good, highly contested between LSU and Arkansas. The Hogs get the sweep, though, holding LSU to only six runs. The opener, though, LSU came back, took the lead. I think it was 3-2, and then tied the game at three. Robert Moore had a big-time clutch hit in the final innings of the contest to help give an Arkansas a 5-3 lead. But I think LSU sent five pitchers to the plate or to the mound across 10 different Arkansas hitters in the sixth or seventh inning. I mean, it was ridiculous the amount of changes Jay was making and just the time it was taking him to get to the mound.
You mentioned, like, upsetting the other fan base. Like, if I'm an LSU fan, like, I'm a little bit upset with that. Like, I'm a little bit like, come on, man, I don't want to watch my team play this way. That's just my opinion, though. I have personal thoughts on pace of play and things that could solve it, one of which is, like, make a pitcher face three batters. Like, make a pitcher face three guys unless he gets hurt. Can't pull him otherwise.
I mean, that's an interesting take. I think would be too hard just based on matchups and lefty on righty and righty on lefty.
I think it makes the matchups that much more interesting. Because then you're like, okay, we've got a righty coming up, but, like, he doesn't hit lefties well. So we're going to put a lefty in because there's a lefty after him. We're going to put him in now because we don't want this guy to face the lefty that's coming up or the righty that's coming up, you know, three or four in. So, I mean, I don't know. I just think for pace of play, it helps, which is a huge problem across the game in majors and in college. And also, I think it adds a different wrinkle to strategy that is interesting. But I just that type of thing, five pitching changes across 10 batters is over the top. It's too much.
It's a very unique perspective, the three batter thing. I hadn't heard that, Serber. And you're not wrong. I just think it's so like it would so fundamentally change the way the game has been played for so long in strategy. But like we've already started to break that wall down. Right? The dam is starting to break. And I'm talking about pitch clocks. I'm talking about automated strikes, which are a thing at the umpire's discretion. You know, if a batter is taking too long, the ump is going to put another strike on there. I don't know what the arbitrary number is. It's been very confusing to follow and look up and keep track of, you know, what the exact rule is with the automatic strike. But it happened in the LSU-Arkansas game where one of the bat, I forget who exactly, I think it was Joe Bear. For the Tigers, and I don't know if Friday or Saturday, but an automatic strike was put on him because he was taking his time and stepping out of the box, and the umpire didn't necessarily grant him that time. I saw a minor league game over the weekend where that was the thing. I was at Truist Stadium, and I think there were four or five automated strike calls, and in the moment, like, as a fan, you're not really aware of what's going on. Yeah. There's just tons of booing, you know? Mm-hmm. So the transparency of it, there needs to be a better job in terms of communicating it to the fans or putting it on the scoreboard or having an announcement, because really, all of a sudden, if there's two strikes, it's a strikeout, and the batter's left standing up there, and you're just having to guess. And ultimately, you know, within a minute or so, oh, that was an automatic strike. So, you know, those are speeding it up. Mound visits are being limited in terms of how many times you can go to the mound before you have to make a trip. I think you get six conferences or make a change. You get six conferences, three of which by the head coach or by a coach. And then every visit after the third is always got to be an automatic pitching change. So, like, you're always going out there with a purpose. Of course, when you visit a mound and the same pitcher in a single inning twice, you always got to pull him the second time. So, there are some guardrails and some parameters that have been applied. But the whole three-batter thing, that is interesting, Serbs. I mean, I don't think you're that far off from thinking outside of the box and looking into the future. Like, we need more people like you to lead this sport into the future, Serbs. That's good.
I might have talked it into existence. I've done that in the past. I do think it's interesting. I think it makes the hitting team's game a little bit different because the game is pretty simple now, right? Like you go for the lefty lefty matchup or the righty righty matchup, and then you know you got a righty on deck for the and you bring in a right handed pitcher, and then you pull the righty and you put a lefty at the plate, right? Like that's mm-hmm. pretty simple. It gets much more complicated if you're forcing someone to hit or to pitch three batters. It also then opens up to like, well, maybe I can't pitch hit this guy because I really need him, you know, down the stretch here. So I do think it makes it, and it's also not a given. Like the game is so much different now. Like it's not a given that if you put a righty at the plate against a lefty, he's gonna excel. Like, there's plenty of guys who can't hit good stuff either way, you know. Or they struggle against against left-handed pitching when they're a right-handed hitter. It can be kind of interesting. It can be kind of weird. I just think that would be a great way to speed things up. It also potentially helps these arms. Like it's, you know, if you're forced to pitch three batters with a guy, maybe he doesn't roll back out there the next day. And then maybe he doesn't wind up having to have Tommy John's, you know, when he's like 25 years old. But that's really conjecture and wild speculation. You know, I don't have any basis of that in scientific fact. But I do like the idea of speeding it up and making and just changing the strategy up. The game's been the same for hundreds of years. This is the only sport that doesn't really look a whole lot different than it did a really long time ago. Like you can watch baseball from the 60s and 70s, and it looks a lot like the game today. Now the shift has you know changed some things strategy wise, the way people, you know, use that, but overall, the game is much more similar than, let's say, football was if you try to watch a football game from the 60s or a basketball game from the 60s. I love the idea of growing the game, making it different, and creating variety among teams, too. Variety among clubs, making you know, baseball look like a specific brand. Because, honestly, a lot of times you can't tell the difference unless you look at the uniforms. That all teams kind of play the same. It can be kind of stale. Can be kind of boring. So anything to change it up, I'm all for it.
Sorry, not sorry, but I've got a tangent as I just had a notification come across my phone, and it's related to our beloved Chicago Bulls. Did you watch the game last night on Sunday?
No, I was at a family Easter event, but I know we lost.
Yeah. When your top three scorers go 22 of 72, you're not going to win many ball games in DeRozan, Vooch, and LaVine. Alex Caruso, though. My goodness. I mean, you and I talked in the office earlier this year. I mean, that dude, he was called at one point by the TNT announcers, the Bald Mamba. It was amazing. I mean, that dude's defensive intensity and the way he can change a game. One of the guys I follow on Twitter had said Caruso could have his hands cut off and still make an impact on the defensive end of the floor. Yeah. I mean, it's a shame he hasn't been as healthy. And we can thank Grayson Allen to an extent for that. But anyways, I know this is a college baseball podcast, but the Bulls did fight hard, Serbs, in game one. We got to wait until Wednesday for game two, which you and I will be in Missouri, so hopefully we have that on television. But 93-86, they fall to the Bucks in game one. But yeah, 6 of 25 for DeRozan, 9 of 27 for Vooch, and LaVine was 6 of 19. The team shot 7 of 37 from downtown.
Yeah, that's the size disadvantage coming into play. We just have too many guards on the floor. Like you're not gonna beat the Bucks, and you're not gonna beat many NFL or NBA teams in a series when you're playing four guards out on the floor.
And Tristan Thompson, who I thought could really help us in providing some size post trade deadline,
not the same.
7 minutes, 2 points, two rebounds, not great, Bob.
Nope.
Okay, dudes of the week. As we move closer to the lineup card and hat tip, and we're out of here. So let's burn through this quickly. For me, dudes that don't strike out, catchers that rake. So Jacob Wilson of Grand Canyon, he's registered 143 at-bats this year. He struck out six times.
Yeah.
That's like every 25 plate appearances. 371 batting average as well. So he's a high average dude who does not strike out, puts the bat on the ball, but he gets hit. David Hogarth of William & Mary is another guy. 122 at-bats, only 3 strikeouts, so he doesn't hit for as high of an average as Jacob Wilson. He's a 261 hitter, but he does put the ball in play. So just incredible, that breakdown. And then Kevin Parada, who is starting to really make a case to be the Golden Spikes Award winner this year. 3 more homers for him over the weekend. He's now leading the country. The Georgia Tech sophomore catcher has 17 bombs. He's hitting .377. He's got 55 RBIs. And another guy who doesn't strike out much, 154 at-bats, only 18 Ks. So Kevin Parada is my biggest dude of the weekend, but also known those others who don't strike out and hit for average like Jacob Wilson of Grand Canyon.
Well, Shass, I'll say shout out to you. You put Riley Cooper from LSU on this sheet just as like a suggestion for me, and that dude looks awesome. Looks like I'm going to meet him in the parking lot. We're about to go listen to some Dead. It's going to be a good time. But
dude, he is thick, man. He's 6'2", 264 pounds. The uniform isn't big enough for him. He came out in relief in 2 games against Arkansas last week. Struck out 3 Razorbacks in each of his appearances. Now, he took, LSU got swept, but it was such a sight to behold.
Yeah, he's a unit. But the guy that stood out to me over the weekend, and I can't believe I watched golf this weekend after watching it all weekend previously, Eric Van Rooyen. Do you see this guy?
Yeah. Yes.
Like, he was a bearded fellow the previous times I'd seen him. How long has he been rocking this mustache? Do you know?
I don't know, because I noticed it, I want to say, either last week or a couple of weeks ago. I've seen him one time before, and I thought to myself, who is that?
Yeah.
Because I want it.
Yeah, I saw him yesterday when I was watching a little golf with my father-in-law, and this guy comes across the screen. He kind of like blew it on the back nine. Could have won yesterday. Sort of he and several others kind of handed that one to Jordan Spieth. But this dude's mustache, he looks like a detective. He's the Monopoly. He's a young Monopoly man for all intents and purposes. Handlebar mustache. It's thick, real thick. He's from South Africa. He's a South African. And he's my dude. He's my life dude of the week because I was totally inspired. I'm not cutting my beard off, but if I did, it would be to match exactly what he has.
That's something one of our bosses, Tom Bowman, out of the Jeff City office, has said with you and I working together in college football Saturday night, which is special primetime offering that we do in the fall, National College Football Game of the Week. From Learfield, he had said that I needed to start curling or twirling the edges of my very own mustache and get a monocle. And I could, you know, assume that character during our live stream and cam hits during my scoreboards and everything else that I do, highlight recaps in studio.
Is that you, though? You've embraced the Selleck. You've got, like, the Tom Selleck mustache. It is very much like late 70s disco era mustache. And I'm into that in and of itself. I see where he's coming from. Everyone loves a fancy mustache, but who the hell has time to put that much, like, wax your mustache all the time? This dude's a pro golfer. That's why he's doing it, okay? Like, there's a reason. He has time because he's a pro golfer from South Africa. So, Bowman, I would love to see that too. You do you, man, and I'm into the Selleck look. Like, you have gone all in on that, and it's like, too many people have gone full Fu Manchu now. Like, too many people have gone handlebar. It's become a little passe in the mustache game. You were right in there. Yours is going to come next. Like, everyone's going to start doing yours, too, because it's out there more than it was, I think, 2 years ago, I'm starting to see. But you're in the sweet spot right now. Don't change it, my man.
Yeah, it's hard to fathom getting rid of this. I can't dream it. I can't dream it up. I think this is stuck with me for the remainder of my life, and I'm cool with that. But yeah, the Eric Van Rooyen look is phenomenal. Not quite me, but certainly a different way to wear the mustache. And I appreciate the kind word, 70 disco. You can describe a mustache in a variety of different ways, and that's a PG way PG. To do it. So yeah. Thank you.
I know you have your daughter with you right now, so I didn't want to step on any toes.
Yeah, no, thank you. Jordan Spieth won. He hadn't won since the previous year. I think it was the Texas Open, which also was on Easter. So Jordan Spieth won the RBC Heritage on Sunday, winning for just the second time in a full calendar year, winning on Easter in back-to-back years. You know what's on Easter next year, Cerber?
What do we got?
The Masters.
No way. Really?
Yeah.
I'm here for
Sunday
that.
At Augusta falls on Easter. Jim Nantz came in very timely with that comment as soon as Spieth sealed the deal on Sunday. So pretty cool. And his baby, this was his first win as a father. His mm-hmm. wife came running out with their kid. She needs to, like, relax a little bit, man. Like that's a newborn baby that she was, you know, keeping close to her chest. And she was, like, sprinting across the green, and the baby's head was, like, bobbing. I didn't know if the baby was breastfeeding at the same time. Like, it was very awkward. But yeah, man, like, kudos for babies being on the golf course in general. You know, I bring my 6-year-old out there all the time. I think I started bringing her out when she was 3 or 4. But having a baby out there, yeah, man, that's introducing the game early and doing it right. So you just can't run with the baby. You know, you got to be careful.
Yeah, you got to be careful. My brother-in-law once went down a slide with their baby. It's the slide, Chess, you will know, in Haynes Park, the little playground area they have set up there in West End at Haynes Park. Mm-hmm. There's the big slide, right? For whatever reason, he went to the top of that one with their, like, 8-month-old, and he slid down it. And when they slid down, like, there's a little bump at the bottom that they kind of hit on the way down, and my sister-in-law just screams out, "My baby!"
I know.
Goes running towards. So, Abigail's... She's turned out fine for the most part, so I don't think that had any long-term effects. But yeah, don't run with the baby. What's coming up this weekend? What do we got on deck?
All right, so midweek games to pay attention to: Gonzaga at Oregon State on Tuesday, West Virginia Pitt, a little backyard brawl action that'll be played at PNC Park, Clemson at Georgia, Kentucky at Louisville, Southern Miss at Tulane, DBU at Texas A&M, Stanford at Cal Poly, UC Santa Barbara against UCLA. Those are midweek games to pay attention to. If I missed you, I'm not sorry. Weekend games: Mississippi State at Ole Miss. That one will begin Thursday. The Egg Bowl series serves. Now, this is extremely interesting because I think the one that these are two of the bottom dwellers mm-hmm. in the SEC West, believe it or not. Yes, the two last place teams, Ole Miss at 5-10 in the West, Mississippi State with a game advantage at 6-9. Just nice. Incredible to hear yourself say that. These two are battling it out. I think for one team that comes away winning this series, they're going to have the opportunity to drastically be able to change the complexion of their year, and this could serve as a launching pad for them towards the end of the regular season and into postseason play. For the loser, Serber, tell me if you agree. I don't think there's any opportunity at the postseason at all, which is just wild to think of.
Yeah, it's crazy, but you see how things set up down the stretch for Mississippi State, and it's, you know, they don't have a favorable run to the end of the season, so they need this one. This will be a big series for both of these squads, and yeah, this is kind of like make or break. Put it all on the line here. If you don't win this series, or you don't, I mean, if they both split, that's not even good, right? You got to take 3 out of 4, don't you?
Well, 3 games. So Mississippi State and Ole Miss, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
But they're playing on Tuesday next week, right? As well?
Are they playing on Tuesday? They got another one coming up? I'm not even looking ahead to next week.
Yeah, they play in Pearl at like a minor league park. So it's a 4-gamer. Okay. To your point, if you win the series, that's good. But what happens if you come out and just drop it on Tuesday and it's a tie series? And then I think it's lose-lose. So you almost need to come out with a sweep to not really sweat Tuesday's matchup, huh?
Yeah, no, a great point. I'm glad you looked ahead to next week to see they actually play on Tuesday. So 4 games in a row between those two, that'd be pivotal. TCU at Oklahoma State, another weekend series. Tennessee at Florida. Grand Canyon, Stanford, and San Diego State with an interesting setup this weekend. Grand Canyon at Stanford, they'll play twice, and then San Diego State will also be the opponent 2 times for each of those teams. So kind of a pod of sorts where Stanford will play San Diego State a couple of times, Grand Canyon a couple of times. You know, they'll each play each other 2 times through over the weekend. Then UNC at Virginia in the ACC, Wake Forest visiting Notre Dame. The Fighting Irish got swept at Duke. Just amazing. The 10th-ranked Fighting Irish, formerly 10th-rated Fighting Irish, get swept by Chris Pollard and them boys out in Durham. So good on the Blue Devils. About the time of the year from a year ago when they started to turn things around. So Duke, last place in the ACC, picking up a massive sweep at the Fighting Irish in Durham. Pitt at Miami. West Virginia visits Texas Tech. Red Raiders swept over the weekend by TCU. Arkansas goes to Texas A&M. The Aggies took 2 out of 3 from Georgia this past weekend. Georgia goes to Alabama. Crimson Tide's doing that first game against Tennessee. Arizona State at Arizona. Territorial Cup action. Iowa at Rutgers. Scarlet Knights, winners of 15 in a row, nation's longest winning streak. Maryland against Illinois. The Terps, the lone Big Ten team that is ranked. Illinois playing some solid ball as well. I think 10-2. 8 of 10, they've won their last 10 games fighting Illini, but 10-2, I think, in league play was the mark for them. And then ECU, reminding us all that the AAC still goes through Greenville. They figured it out. They swept UCF, and huge showdown of the American this weekend at Tulane. ECU, the Pirates, and the Green Wave will go at it. Okay, hat tip on the way out. Serber, we'll start with you.
Family potlucks. Did a big, you know, Easter dinner yesterday with my in-laws and the whole family. Everybody brought like 1 or 2 things, and no one was stressed out on the holiday because of it. So if you're getting together with family, make it a potluck dinner. Don't try and rule the world and like do it all yourself. Like, you can make it a lot easier on yourself, and everyone gets to like show off a thing that they're proud of too. So I'm a big fan of family potluck dinners, and that's my hat tip for the week, because really, holiday weekends are mostly about family.
What was the favorite potluck dish?
Was it bad? Does it make no sense if I say it was mine? Because it was mine. I make my grandmother's spätzle, which is a German egg noodle. I make those from scratch, and then I whipped up a little bit of pork gravy to go with it. You sort of pour that gravy over top of the noodles. Noodles and gravy. Yes. Get it in here. It's delicious.
That's awesome. I had a chicken salad sandwich at the golf course. I worked in the pro shop all day, trying to slide back into there a day a week just to make a little extra coin, but more importantly, get free golf for the summer. So that's important.
That's
so I had a chicken salad sandwich. I also had a whole box of Mike and Ike's when I got home from my daughter's Easter basket. So
really? Mike and Ike's?
That was good.
Good on you for not taking one of her good candies.
Well, Mike and I look, that Mike and Ike is pretty high in the power rankings. But that's going to be a conversation, I think, for another podcast, because we do need to go. My hat tip would be minor league baseball, though. I did go see the Dash over the weekend. I actually was in the press box. I was getting some side work, working on my craft, I guess you would say. But it reminded me of just how glorious it is to have minor league baseball. If you're fortunate enough to have that in a community where you live, or near enough in a city where you can make the trek, bring the family out, or go out with friends for a night on the town and just experience a low-key night under the lights or on an afternoon game on the weekend, it's great because you're able to take in one or two gimmicks, usually, in a promotion that is certainly going to help try to steer more people through the gates. And one in particular serves, I shared this with you on Twitter, the Savannah Bananas, which have become a national phenomenon over the last couple of years, known for banana ball that they play, which features of that. Real games, they'll play banana ball from time to time. And banana ball means if a fan catches a foul ball in the stands, you're out. If there's a wild pitch, you as the hitter can steal first base and try to round all of the bases before the entire defense, all nine fielders, touch the ball. Yes, this is a real thing. Playing in kilts, playing on stilts. But most recently, the Savannah Bananas sent a guy up to the plate with a burning bat, a bat on fire.
Yeah.
And he hit a single up the middle. Just incredible the way the Savannah Bananas out of Georgia have just reinvented or reinvigorated what minor league baseball is and should be. And I just thought that was super rad.
Yeah, no, this is awesome. This guy's a total unit, walking up, flaming bat. And he makes it happen. I did not know they were doing all that other stuff too. So that's pretty.
Yeah,
cool.
They have a whole set of rules. I'll share the article with you on ESPN. It was posted a year ago. They actually put it back out on the website because it applied after the burning bat incident this week. And I was looking over it earlier, and it's incredible. It's incredible. I'll share that on Twitter. You can check it out at Kyle Shass. He's Michael Cerber. He's at L_Cerberino. Serbs, you and I have a plane to catch. We're Midwest road tripping, or plane tripping, I guess. It's not a road trip, but much to the chagrin of you, you're not much of a frequent flyer, a flyer by any means. So are you scared? Are you worried? I know you already got your TSA pre-check-in going. You're about to get on an airplane, my friend. You'll live.
Yeah, no, I think I'll be fine. My main worry is I just don't want... I'm not worried about any safety or anything. I just don't want to be that guy that like holds someone up at the airport that like later they're like, I would have gotten to the gate sooner, and then they like look at me,
yeah,
instead. I just don't want to be that guy.
You'll be good, man. I'll hold your hand. We'll get through it together. All right. Michael Cerber on Twitter at L_Cerberino. I'm on Twitter at Kyle Shass. At CS Now Tweets is where you can find us. We'll be back again a week from today. Until then, enjoy all the college baseball, NBA playoffs, golfs, whatever it is that tickles your fancy. We'll be back with you in a week here on College Sports Now.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.